The following is an excerpt from the Science Magazine podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Now, David Grimm, editor of Science's online daily news site, Science Now, is here with a wrap-up of some of the latest science news, including a story about fellatio and fruit bats. Dave, I don't know what to say.
Well, Rob, believe it or not, fellatio is not just confined to humans. In fact, it's also been seen in bonobos, which are very close relatives. But it turns out fellatio, or oral sex performed on the males of a species, has now been seen in a non-primate, and that non-primate is fruit bats.
Just a happenstance of a behavioral study, or were they looking for it?
No, the scientists weren't actually looking for it. They were just studying mating behavior, actually, in these fruit bats, which are native to Southeast Asia. And they had taken a bunch of males and female pairs and put them in cages at night, and they're nocturnal. And, you know, with infrared cameras, just sort of spied on them while they were doing their thing. And all of a sudden, they got a bit of a shock because during mating, the female actually bent over and began licking the male's genitals.
Did all the female fruit bats do this?
No, but actually a large percentage of them did. The researchers saw this behavior in about 70% of the females. So this was not a rare occurrence. And what they also noticed is that the females that performed fellatio, or, you know, were doing this licking, all of them had experienced longer copulation times. In fact, on average, the females that performed fellatio had about a 4-minute copulation with the males versus a 2-minute average for the females that didn't perform fellatio.
Seems like that would confer some sort of evolutionary advantage based on this behavior.
Right. Well, that was the researcher's first idea. You know, is there some sort of evolutionary or, you know, behavioral advantage to doing this? And they have a couple of ideas. First of all, they say longer copulation could be beneficial. It could facilitate sperm transport. And the longer males are copulating with a female, the less time they're spending copulating with other females. So it could be a way for females to sort of hold on to their man, as it were, and prevent him from inseminating other females. And there's also some other ideas. Other animals have been known to lick their genitals after mating. And it's thought that there's proteins and enzymes in the saliva which may kill sexually transmitted diseases, viruses and bacteria or whatever.
So the researchers don't really know why the bats are doing this.
No, they don't. And, you know, Rob, one possibility is that they are just being sexually playful like their human and bonobo counterparts.
Does that suggest that with humans and bonobos, it doesn't have an evolutionary advantage, this behavior?
Well, that's a good question, Rob. It's possible that even with humans and bonobos, there is some sort of evolutionary advantage to fellatio.
Well, moving on then. So what other stories have you brought with you this week?
Well, Rob, on to another unusual animal behavior, or at least one that was deemed very unusual at the time. This next study has to do with a famous case of two man-eating lions in 1898 who terrorized the southern Kenyan region of Tsavo. And what these lions did is, over a 9-month period, they snuck into tents at night and killed as many as 135 people over this period.
What were the people doing there?
Well, there was a bunch of British in the area. They were building a bridge across the Tsavo River, and this was a very important river that provided water to this region.
I've seen a movie about this.
There's actually been 3 movies about this, and the most recent was a movie that came out a few years ago called The Ghost and the Darkness, the ghost being one of the lions and the darkness being the other one of the lions. So it's a very famous story. And it's also a very compelling story because researchers have wondered for a long time, first of all, why did the lions do it? But in fact, this study actually deals with another question, which is, how many people did the lions actually eat? One account puts it as high as 135 people, but that is by the guy who actually ended up shooting and killing these lions, this British colonel named John Patterson. When Patterson first shot the lions, he wrote a book and he said the lions killed about 28 people. But when he published the second edition of the book, he had increased that count to 135 people. He said, you know, it turns out that the lions actually killed a lot of other natives in the area as well. And so you're talking about a very large death toll here. And researchers were wondering, you know, is there a way to actually verify these numbers?
Patterson's motivation might have been to increase book sales, you're saying.
Well, that's one theory. And so what the researchers did in this study was they analyzed samples of the hair and bone of these lions. And the researchers got these samples from the Field Museum in Chicago, which has the lion's skulls and skin in their collection. And what you can do with these samples is you can actually tell a lot about a creature's diet. And that's because as animals eat, they take up different ratios of carbon isotopes. For example, some plants have more of an isotope of carbon-13 and other plants have more of an isotope of carbon-12. So if you've got, say, zebras eating these plants, and you're eating, you know, more of one plant than another, and then the lion eats the zebra, the lion also accumulates these various carbon isotope ratios in their tissues. And so the researchers, you know, took the samples from the lions, they took some samples from zebras and other typical prey of lions, and they also took some samples from people who lived in the area. And what the researchers found is, based on these samples, in the last 3 months of these lions' lives, about 30% of their diet consisted of people. And what's more, when they, you know, factor that into how much the average person weighs and how much a lion eats in a day, what they estimated is that the lions ate, between the two of them, about 35 people, which matches pretty closely to Patterson's original estimate of how many people these lions killed.
Well, what about the why? Why did the lions change their diet to start feasting on people? Was it just because they were more available, lying around in tents?
Well, it turns out that actually habitat change may have had a lot to do with it. In 1898, the Tsavo region was hit by a very large drought, and there was also a European-introduced virus that was killing many of the lions' natural prey, including buffalo and wildebeest. So it's possible the lions just said, hey, our normal food source is running out, let's move on to people, which, as you say, were plentifully available in that region during that time. And what's really interesting, what the researchers saw is, you know, a lot of creatures, you know, when their habitat changes, they'll begin to transition to new foods. And what they saw is actually one of the lions seemed to have eaten about 25 people, where the other lion only ate about 10 people. And what that suggests is that one of the lions had sort of fully transitioned into eating people, where the other one may have been sort of just starting to make this transition. So the researchers actually saw sort of a snapshot in time of this transition to new prey happening.
Has this trend continued?
Well, what really surprised me about this study is actually this famous or infamous 1898 incident is actually not that unusual. Lions continue to kill people in very large numbers in Africa even today. And so one of the outside experts for the study actually said, why are we looking back 100 years about why lions kill people? We can just look at lions today.
Okay. So last story. What's this last story about this week?
Well, Rob, speaking about habitat change, this last story has to do with a massive ice age that struck Earth about 450 million years ago, and how a mountain range, the rise of a mountain range, specifically the Appalachians, may have actually caused this ice age to happen.
Now, I thought mountain ranges were associated with lots of volcanic activity, putting carbon dioxide into the air, a greenhouse gas.
And that's really what the central mystery is here, Rob. When the Appalachians formed about 460 million years ago, they were preceded by a lot of volcanic activity in this region. And as you say, the volcanoes actually helped create the mountains in the first place. But what volcanoes also do is they belch tremendous amounts of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. And this, as a greenhouse gas, causes a lot of global warming. So why would you have an ice age happen so soon after you had all of this greenhouse gas in the atmosphere?
Sulfur, something about sulfur, blocking the sun's rays from hitting the earth, darkening the skies.
And that's a popular theory. You know, when all these aerosols enter the air, they actually block the sun, and that can cause the world to cool. But if that had happened, you would expect the ice age to happen very soon after the Appalachians rose. But it turns out the ice age didn't actually happen until about 15 million years after this volcanic activity. So why was there such a delay? And it turns out the mountains were actually absorbing this carbon dioxide and taking it out of the atmosphere. And they pulled so much carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere that the world began to cool.
Something then about what the mountains were made of.
Exactly. When you have a lot of CO2 in the atmosphere, it causes acid rain. So these rain droplets are very high in carbon dioxide. And what the researchers found is that when this carbon dioxide hit the basalt rock, which is this volcanic rock in the Appalachians, the carbon dioxide combined with calcium in the basalt, and this created calcium carbonate, which is the same as limestone. And this limestone ran off the mountain into these ancient seabeds. And so what you have is the carbon leaving the atmosphere and being trapped in this limestone. You know, it may not seem like a big effect, but if you're talking over millions of years, this is actually a tremendous amount of carbon dioxide that the Appalachians actually took out of the atmosphere. And the sun was actually a lot dimmer back then than it is today, too. So combined with the relative dimness of the sun and taking all this carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, Earth entered into this deep freeze, which drove nearly two-thirds of all the species on Earth extinct.
Is this a trend? Does this kind of thing happen every time there's a new mountain range that goes up?
Well, one big question has been, did something very similar happen with the Himalayas? Those went up about 35 million years ago and also preceded an ice age. But it turns out the Himalayas were made from a very different kind of rock. Granite makes up a large percentage of the Himalayas, and granite cannot sequester carbon dioxide the same way basalt rock can. And so this is more of a just of coincidence with what happened with the Himalayas, whereas with the Appalachians, it looks like this was a direct cause of the ice age.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Rob.
So what other stories are you looking into for Science Now or on the policy blog, Science Insider?
Well, Rob, for Science Now, we've got a story about new evidence for water on Mars and another story about how language learning starts in the womb. And on Science Insider, Science's policy blog, we've got new news on swine flu, how the vaccine is getting to or not getting to poor countries, and also the Large Hadron Collider, this massive physics experiment that's happening in Switzerland. A new group has formed to hope to try to shut the collider down, arguing that it will mean the end of all life on Earth. So check out all of these stories on the site.
David Grimm is the editor of Science Now, the online daily news site of science. You can check out the latest science news, plus find a link to the science policy blog, Science Insider, at sciencenow.sciencemag.org.